Welcome to Under the Abbey Stand. I'm Jack Swindlehurst. Coming up this week, we look back at an exciting, packed-out encounter with Ipswich, as well as looking ahead to games against Sheffield Wednesday and Shrewsbury. Joining me today are Tom Walker. Hello.
Afternoon. How are we?
Very good. And Jordan Warland.
Hi, Jack. Hi, everyone. It feels good to be doing a podcast in a world where Wesley Houlihan has still not lost to Ipswich Town.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a great place to start. A sold-out Abbey Stadium welcomed Ipswich on Saturday, and it was an eventful game, to say the least. The atmosphere was incredible, and the football didn't disappoint in the end. Tom, how was it for you?
Yeah, really enjoyable. We were talking about this after the game, and I think I saw it as in many ways a good opportunity to look back at the sort of progress that the club's sort of made in the last probably decade. I think it probably during that time we kind of viewed that progress in kind of little segmented bits. So you've obviously got the sort of rebuild after Martin Ling left the football club, promotion back to the league, stabilising in the league and then back into League One. And there's a brilliant tweet, I think, went out by 100 Years of Coconuts that as we record on this day, I think 10 years ago, we lost 3-0 away at Hayes in Yedding. And yeah, I think I was in front of about 800. So to be playing former European champions in front of 10 times that attendance and getting something from the game in League One, it just shows the progress that the club's made. So I think it was a really good opportunity to do that. And as you say, the game itself, I think we probably the international break and obviously not having a game maybe meant we were slightly rusty. Obviously, it took us a little while to get to grips with an Ipswich team who are just sort of starting to click. I think they signed sort of 18, 19 new players in the summer, some of them very, very experienced and very, very high quality. Obviously, Aluko scored the two goals. Has played at the top level. Morsi, who's a decent championship player probably, and sort of several others as well. We grew into the game, and I was really impressed by how we just sort of turned the screw when it was needed. And I sort of came away from the game thinking, you know what, if this goes on for another 5 or 6 minutes, we might sneak something here. Probably not as much as at Crewe a couple of weeks ago, where we would have won that game if it went on probably for another minute. Really encouraging. Good to get something out of the game. And I mean, it's brilliant seeing the Abbey packed, really packed, not just a little bit packed, sold out. I mean, like rammed. Sergio Ramos.
It's really fun taking points off the big teams, isn't it? It's really fun. I think Tom's being, a lot of what Tom's saying there, I agree with, but I also think Tom's being slightly polite about being rusty after the international break. I think that first half hour, perhaps we were a little bit taken by the occasion, perhaps. And we certainly, we certainly grew into it. And second half, I think we controlled the game for periods in the second half. And I also think we were fitter than Ipswich. They were very good in the first half at pressing us, but second half, they seemed to really tire. And you saw the likes of Brophy and Tracy and Iredale just doing, doing legs on them in the second half, just go to show how, how much fitter we are. It's an interesting one, isn't it? There seems to be two great mysteries in the world of Cambridge United. Number one, who spent all that money on the cow? And number two, why do we seem so insistent on giving teams a head start in games? Now, we found out the answer to one of those mysteries, but we need to now find the answer for the second mystery. And I know it's perhaps a bit of a negative take on the game yesterday, because obviously there was lots of positives, like Tom said, Ipswich are a terrific squad and we showed such great character to get back into the game. But I do feel like we're making things harder for ourselves. And, it's not the first time that we've had to come from 2-0 down this season. We literally did it in the last game week. And, it's four games now on the trot where we've conceded two goals, which is a concern, to put it politely. But those are the negative takes on yesterday. There was plenty of positives. I thought, the character and the persistence to get back in the game was superb. And we've seen that already this season. And I think it's that spirit that will hopefully see us stay up. That's the kind of fighting spirit that you're going to need. There was lots of big individual performances. I know we're going to get on to talk about Big Joe. Paul Digby, for me, felt like there was two or three of him on the pitch at times yesterday. I thought Brophy had his best game so far for United, and really glad that he scored. So, yeah, lots of positives to take from that. But there is also a little negative that I think we need to discuss, which is, you know, why do we seem to keep giving people such a lovely head start?
Yeah, that's probably it's probably the elephant in the room, I guess, that we do that obviously we need to talk about, because obviously if it was a one-off thing, it's probably not much of a concern. But I mean, it's probably been a month, 6 weeks, where it's not just going behind, it's the manner of the goals that we're conceding. It's just sloppy. Like I say, if it was like one, two, maybe in three games, you can sort of say, right, you know, be on the arse. But like, it just sort of needs to be sorted out now. And I'm not sure exactly what it is. You know, we can talk about the international break being a little bit rusty, which I think, you know, we were. And, you know, like I said, it took us a little while to get into the game, get up to the sort of tempo of the game. But, you know, we didn't have that excuse at Crewe. We didn't have that excuse against Fleetwood. We didn't have that excuse against Gillingham. So I think just part of it, just like these players just have to be more switched on. I think, you know, when you look at specifically against Ipswich, where the two goals came from, it is just individual errors, unfortunately, and that's kind of as simple as it is. Obviously, the first goal, I didn't realise at the time that it was just one header from an Ipswich centre-back that completely bypassed our entire team. Obviously, Masterson makes a hash of clearing it. Mitov comes out a little bit too far. I guess he's caught in no man's land. I wouldn't put the blame for that goal on Mitov at all.
He also slipped, didn't he?
A little bit.
I wonder if he didn't slip, he might have been able to get to the player and sort of, you know, the player might not have hit it first time and perhaps would have, you know, tried to take it around him.
Yeah, quite possibly. I wouldn't like to put all the blame for the first goal on Mitov, because clearly...
No, not at all.
Because clearly, you know, it obviously originates from Masterson's mistake, and I think there's been a lot of chat, certainly in obviously interactions with, you know, obviously the pod on Twitter over the last, you know, sort of 24 hours that... you know, Marston maybe needs a bit of time out the firing line, which I think I probably agree with. You know, the second goal, it's just, you know, it comes from a corner, doesn't it? And it's another set piece that we're conceding from. I think in terms of the sort of basics of if you want to stay in a division and stay up, you need to be able to defend from set pieces very well. They probably, in an attacking sense and the defensive sense, need to kind of build quite a large part of how you get results. Now, clearly our equaliser came from a set piece. So actually going forward, we're doing okay from set pieces. The equaliser at Crewe, I think, originated from a corner as well. But defensively, it's genuinely just woeful at the moment. You know, we can't, I mean, to be honest, I said after the Crewe game, if we give Ipswich a two-goal head start, then we're not going to get anything out of the game. That clearly wasn't the case. But, you know, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to work out if you keep shipping two goals every week, you're not going to win too many football matches, because... you know, we are still struggling to create chances, and we're certainly not going to be scoring three goals every week, that's for sure. So it's a worrying sign, obviously, in the sense that it's happening and it is costing us points. You know, a good point against Ipswich, but if you defend better and you switched on from the start, that could, you know, quite feasibly have been three. The same at Crewe as well, and one or two of the other games that we've talked about in the past. But I guess if you look at it, if you take kind of a positive spin on it, it doesn't seem to be like a structural problem. It's something that should hopefully just work itself out. I guess part of the responsibility goes on to Bonner, just kind of managing the situation, knowing when's the right time to sort of, you know, take people in and out of the out obviously the first team lineup. But yeah, it's certainly a concern and something that needs resolving sort of now, basically, because otherwise, yeah, we're going to get dragged a little bit closer to the relegation zone, and then you end up in a real battle, which, you know, obviously we do expect, but. These are basics of the game that you simply have to get right. So needs to be sorted pronto, if that's okay.
Yeah, the gap to the relegation zone is only 3 points as it stands. We've got a game in hand over a few teams in the league, but it is one of those jobs where we're already looking over our shoulders a bit. So Jordan, we've kind of covered quite a few of the questions that came in from the likes of Harry, Omelu and Ryan about the, you know, the defensive unit and the issues with that. Is there anything else you kind of want to add? Anything that you think they need to do? Or is it just about rotating?
I think he will rotate. And I think we will see Okadina come in. But we saw last year that last season that Bonner was quite good with young centre backs and not, you know, not rotating them instantly and you know, sort of protecting them a little bit. I think maybe like the Sheffield Wednesday game might be a lot of pressure and it might help Masterton for him to stay in. I do think we'll see Okadina get some game time. I'm really looking forward to that as well. He's obviously our player. He's here for 2 more years. We need to invest in him and you know, get him playing. I think on this topic, you know, like you said, there's lots of people that have written on Twitter and asked questions and there's been good conversation on there. People seem to circle around 3 different areas, either the personnel, the formation, or Bonner's approach to games. For me personally, I don't think it's Bonner's approach to games. Like the whole idea of giving up possession quite easily to opposing teams being the reason why this is happening. I can kind of see the parallel there that obviously if we surrender possession, it's going to put more pressure on our defence. And therefore errors might happen. But I think it is more like Tom was saying, it's individual mistakes. And it must be so frustrating to Bonner and the coaching team to spend all week on the training pitch looking at items like this and then seeing quite calamitous things happen in games. And I think honestly, the 2 goals we conceded against Ipswich yesterday are probably the worst. Like it's a problem that's getting worse. I think maybe the formation yesterday, we were perhaps missing a Liam O'Neill and Adam May perhaps wasn't as comfortable doing that defensive work. And I think maybe on Tuesday night, it might benefit to have someone else in there, but O'Neill's injured. So we're going to have to come up with a new plan, but yeah, I don't know. I think it comes back to individual errors more than the formation or how Bonner approaches games. And realistically, I think it is down to lack of experience and game time. And that's just the kind of profile of player that we can afford at the moment. So unless celebrity Tom Walker can convince American investors to splash some cash in January, I think this is a situation that we're just going to have to sort of be patient with. And the more that people get game time, the better they'll become.
Yeah, I probably agree with that. And, you know, I do think it's an issue that, you know, if you look at it, like it should just sort of resolve itself over time. I certainly don't think Bonner's approach to games is anything that's, you know, doing this. Like you say, it's probably more of a...
it's a learning curve, isn't it? Like we're in a league and we're learning that if you make those kind of mistakes, it's going to be more costly than what it was last season. And I feel like perhaps they should have learned the lesson already, but these are young players. So perhaps it just needs a little bit more patience.
Yeah. I wonder if the sort of character of the team's maybe counterproductive at times because they know that they can just get back into games. So, you know, I'm being kind of facetious, but I wonder if the fact that they know that they've got that in the locker and they've got that spirit to kind of go to the end, so to speak, means that maybe they are, you know, it causes them to be a touch more sloppy than obviously ideally we'd like to be. Clearly they're not, maybe they're just challenging themselves now. How expensively assembled a team can we chuck a 2-goal lead to and still get it back? The answer is Ipswich Town at the moment. And we've obviously got another big test on Tuesday. So let's see what happens there.
Yeah, before we look ahead to that, there was more questions that have come in on Twitter and generally surrounding the game yesterday about kind of two-pronged thing, the standard of the refereeing and the treatment of Joe Ironside by the Ipswich defenders. Tom, how did you feel about the refereeing yesterday and kind of a conversation about Big Joe and how much he gets fouled?
Yeah, I'll start with the refereeing. let me just crack my knuckles.
do that manager cliche of saying, oh, you know, I don't want to attack the referees, however.
No, I do want to attack the referees. I'm not even going to sit on the fence about it. The sort of profile of player that Joe is means that he's always going to get treatment from defenders similar to that. And we saw it all of last season. We've seen it so far all of this season. And we're going to see it for the rest of this season. Because like I say, that's just what happens to target men. It's always going to be a battle. the treatment that he got off the Ipswich defenders was ridiculous. Like, there were times where his shirt was nearly pulled off. It was like that bad. And I get it sometimes it's a bit of a battle, and you know, Joe will probably like a bit of that as well, such the sort of player that he is. But like, it was just like they were trying to just beat him up, basically. And the referee made a lot of strange decisions during the game. And I actually thought he was going to rule out ISR's equaliser.
Yeah, did
I sort of had to, I just had to kind of give myself a moment just to check that it was definitely, sort of allowed before obviously the mental ensued. But I don't think Josar Giles had won a free kick all afternoon. And like, there was literally probably about 20 or 30 occasions where he should have done. And that I don't think that's an exaggeration. We're literally talking every time the ball went forward, he was getting fouled. And he did what he does best, and that's, takes the hits, like we say, every week. And ultimately, he stays on the pitch long enough to get, to get the equaliser. It looks like they probably have injured him. He obviously sort of hobbled off. I think he, was probably more of an impact injury than anything else, as you might expect with that sort of treatment. But it's a real frustration. Because the thing is, like, the referees have a duty to protect these players. That's a big part of their remit, not just to sort of manage the game and make correct decisions, but they have a duty of care to make sure the players, stay safe, don't get injured. Gironside needs a bit more protection from that. And not just Ironside, obviously goes the other way as well to other teams in the league and all that sort of stuff. You can't allow a player to be fouled that regularly and that sort of brutally and expect them to stay fit. Like, these guys are going to pick up injuries, and referees kind of need to get to grips with that, because unfortunately, because Giants are very good at what he does, that's the only way that the defenders feel that they can actually, kind of nullify his threat. So, it was a real frustrating afternoon, obviously, in that respect. But, I guess it was fitting that he obviously goes through all of that and then pops up right at the end of the equaliser. So, good on him. But, the refs, like... It obviously wasn't just against Ipswich, but I thought that was a particularly sort of, it was almost like exaggerated, like in terms of how much kind of treatment he was getting. So it's something that needs to be, refs just got to be a bit stronger in that regard. I feel like they've kind of let him down there a little bit.
Sounds like you're not happy with the ref, mate.
No, I thought, other than that, he's fine.
He's really taken that cliche of takes the hits to a new level based on yesterday. And there was a really good question about, a really good question we had on Twitter about where does the line sit between duty of care and allowing the game to continue? And I think we're seeing this more in the current game. We saw it a lot in the Euros, where referees are being encouraged to not micro ref and to not be so hot on whistling and let the game flow as much as possible. But it's far from perfect at the moment, because they need to find the balance of protecting players, like Tom was saying, but also protecting the image of the game. Like, you could see, I don't know, like, imagine sort of like younger children watching that game yesterday and seeing that they could get away with doing that kind of thing on the pitch. It's not the right message that we should be sort of setting. Duty of care. Ironside's not going to last the season if he has to deal with that every week. I agree with Tom. I thought the ref and also the linesman were very poor. They missed a lot of blatant fouls and shirt pulls and everything that Tom said. I feel like we played into it a little bit in that we kept pumping the ball to Ironside. I would love to have seen us come up with a different plan, because it did seem like Ipswich were dealing with it fairly well most of the time. So perhaps we kind of were our own worst enemies by keeping insisting that Joe does play that role. Like Tom said, it's so fitting that the Ironside gets the winner the equaliser. It felt like a winner, though, didn't it, based on the afternoon that he experienced. And I hope that he's fit for Tuesday night.
Yeah, that's a point that we don't really know. We can't clarify yet whether he'll be fit. But like you said, Jordan, before the podcast, very quick turnaround. Tuesday night suddenly seems just around the corner when Cambridge United welcome another massive team in Sheffield Wednesday to the Abbey. So that's going to be an absolutely cracking night. And Jordan caught up with James from Wednesday Till I Die podcast.
Right, Hughes fans, I'm here with James from the Wednesday Till I Die podcast. Thanks, James, for taking time out from your house move to chat to us. I think a few United fans will probably be wondering how come Sheffield Wednesday find themselves in League One. So what was the story of last season and how come you're down here?
Well, obviously, well documented that at the start of the season, we got, you know, we were 12 points deducted, which didn't help things. So, you know, in terms of like recruitment and things like that, our players are going to come to a side that sits, you know, rock bottom, 12 points adrift before we've even kicked a ball. Obviously, that then got reduced to 6, but by the point where, you know, they got reduced, it was perhaps a little bit too late. It was an awful, awful season. The football was dire. You know, we had change of manager seemingly every 2 minutes. We started with Gary Monk. We had Tony Pulis, and then we've ended up with Darren Moore, who's obviously still there now. It wasn't good at all. And to be honest, I think I'd be right in saying that we deserve to go down that season. But no, like it's a fresh start and everything this year. But yeah, it wasn't good. I was just thankful that we didn't actually get to go and watch that football, because it perhaps could have been a whole lot worse.
And how are you looking this year? Are you looking like a team that will be challenging come the end of the season? Obviously, you're just outside the playoffs as we speak. Do you reckon you'll sustain that for the year?
It's a funny one. At the start of the season, we set off, and I think everyone thought we'd walk it, you know, 4 games with 3 wins, 1 draw, top of the league, not conceded a goal. I thought, you know, everyone thought it was going to be quite easy. But since then, we've hit a rocky patch is probably an understatement. The league position, if you spoke to many Wednesday fans, including myself, like you think that we're battling relegation the way that we're talking. You know, there's lots of groans about, you know, more out and things like that, which, like I said, you just mentioned there, we're just outside the playoff places. We should perhaps be a little bit more happy. But if I said to you that this season we've perhaps only played, barring yesterday, which was a decent performance, to be fair, but other than that, we've probably played 60 minutes of good football throughout the whole course of the season. It's been very disjointed. I don't think Darren Moore knows his best 11, which might be a question that you come on to in a short while, and making lots of changes. One of our listeners coined it and said, I don't know if you play Football Manager at all, but you know, when you start getting Football Manager, the first day you sign about 5 or 6 players, mm-hmm. and as the transfer window goes on, the more players become available, and you sign those as well, and that's kind of what it feels like. We've signed 14 players, and it's just trying to fit them all into the side, and it's just not really working at the moment.
Yeah, I was going to ask a sort of a question around that, James, just like what the sort of style of football and formation you tend to play is. So what can we expect on Tuesday night, do you think?
I think the style of play is evolving throughout the course of the season. At the start of the season, I would have said it's very much tippy-tappy football, you know, trying to walk the ball in the back of the net. You know, you've probably seen that we don't score a great deal of goals. Our midfield, in my opinion, is a little bit weak. We haven't got anyone that's, you know, strong, hard tackler, you know, anyone like that. It's very much, you know, playing good football, but the problem is it's just not coming off at the moment. You know, we on Saturday, you know, just gone, we did play a bit more direct, and that seemed to work. So in answer to your question, what style of football do we play? I'd have to say it seems that in the recent weeks we are trying to play a bit more direct and create more chances. It's clear to see that the tippy-tappy football that we started playing at the start of the season just doesn't work in League One. You know, we have to remember that it is League One at the end of the day. We're not playing in the Champions League. You know, it might look good and stuff, but if it's not working and we're not, you know, we're not getting the results. I mean, the Plymouth game was the one where it clearly didn't work. We got beat 3-0 and we just got, I won't say we got played off the park, we got bullied off the park, and I think that kind of showed there that the style of play that we set out at the start of the season perhaps isn't for us. So yeah, I expect a little bit more direct. The likes of Gregory up front, who is probably on paper one of the best, if not the best, you know, striker in the division. He scored 2 on Saturday, showed his qualities, and we just wasn't getting the ball up to him. Now playing a bit more direct, Not when I say direct, I'm not saying it's just long ball. You know, we're not just hoofing it up to the striker. It's a bit more, you know, a few less passes to get up to the front two, kind of thing.
I was going to ask you about key players. So obviously, you mentioned your striker there. Who else do you reckon Cambridge fans should keep an eye out for on Tuesday night as potential sort of either match winners or key match influencers?
Yeah, well, I'd be lying if I didn't say Barry Bannon was probably our key player. You know, again, I know I've alluded to Gregory being perhaps one of the best strikers in the division, but Barry Bannon is hands down the best player in League One, and he's probably one of the best players in the Championship as well. You know, the range of passing, his dedication, his work rate, things like that. He just, you know, he got an assist on Saturday for the first goal. I don't know if you look at this like in depth in terms of stats and stuff, but key passes, he's always one or two every week. We're just not obviously converting those chances, which is a shame. But yeah, Barry Bannon he's a special player.
Were you surprised to keep him in the summer, considering you dropped down?
If I'm being honest, yes, I was, especially with like the financial troubles and things like that, and with COVID. But to be honest, the fact that teams perhaps haven't got as much money, he says, having, you know, seen Newcastle be taken over for billions of pounds. But I think the fact that teams haven't got as much money to spend probably helped us. It's not only that; there's lots of, you know, people at the end of the day, aren't they? And you know, family stuff comes into it. I think he's happy in Sheffield, which helps. He's, you know, he's in his 30s now, so. Yeah, I mean, I was surprised to see him stay. I am glad that he stayed. One thing I would say though is if you're gonna get some points out of Tuesday night, if you stop Barry Bannon from playing, then that's, you know, we seem to not really have much of a plan B. Everything does kind of go through Barry Bannon. So yeah, he's a fantastic player. If you mark him out of the game, we're probably going to struggle.
Brilliant. I've got one last question for you, James. What's your take on Tuesday night in terms of result? What are you backing?
Well, I mean, no disrespect to Cambridge, but when you look at this fixture, you know, at the start of the season, you've got to be looking at saying we've got to take 3 points. I know it's away from home and things like that. The fact that we've just drawn to Wimbledon on Saturday makes it even more important that we do take 3 points. You know, the fans, players, everyone's, I don't want to say expecting to go up this season, but that's our main target, to bounce back into the Championship. And only picking up a point up at Cambridge is, quite frankly, not really good enough. So we need to be going in there to get the win. I think we'll be fired up for the fact that we let a 2-goal lead slip on Saturday. But the game's not played on paper, is it? Do you know what I mean? We've got to let those, you know, we're a lack of concentration on Saturday. We've got to make sure that we stay switched on. Your guys are going to be up for it on Tuesday, no doubt about it. Obviously, being at home, I'm sure it'll be a big crowd and things like that. We'll be, you know, be taking quite a few fans down there. In terms of a score, we are leaking goals now. We weren't at the start of the season, but we are now. I think it's probably going to be a 2-1. I think it's a 2-1 every single time, but I think 2-1 would be quite fair. Obviously, I've got to back our guys to win on Tuesday night, but I'm sure it'll be a good game.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, James.
No problem. Cheers, Jordan, and all the best for Tuesday.
Great to hear from James there from the Wednesday Till I Die podcast. So, Jordan, good to catch up with James. How are you feeling about Cambridge's chances against Wednesday on Tuesday?
Wednesday on Tuesday, love it. Yeah, no, thanks to James for speaking to us. He was actually moving house and he still committed to the fact that he said that he would chat to us and did the interview mid-house move, which was good of him. How am I feeling about Tuesday night? I feel like okay. I think if we can, like we were saying sort of earlier, if we can stop those soft goals and those early goals, I think we might be okay. If we can't, I think we're going to hit a bit of a problem because Sheffield Wednesday have a very mean defence. They don't concede a lot. And, you know, they're just coming off the back of basically AFC Wimbledon on Saturday did to them what we did to Ipswich. So I'm sure they're going to have a rocket up their arse for letting a 2-goal lead slip on Saturday. So they're going to be more motivated to put that right. One of the things that James said to me off the call was that actually, despite the fact that they're sat just one place outside the playoffs, they have a couple of times in recent weeks had unhappy fans booing at halftime and full-time. I think there were boos yesterday at full-time for letting that lead slip against Wimbledon. So I think there's pressure on them. I think as a club and perhaps some of their fan base had that kind of mentality of, oh, we're a big club that's been relegated down here. We're just here for one season on loan. We'll bounce straight back. You know, we see it all the time. Dare I say, some of our fans may have even felt like that when we went into the conference. But I think, you know, the more switched on Sheffield Wednesday fans will realise that actually League One is a really tough league, and there are some big clubs here and clubs that have been here for quite some time. Look at Ipswich, they've been here for a fair few seasons now. So I think they're starting to realise that it's going to be a tough year. They are just outside the playoffs, so they've obviously got a good squad. James doesn't think their midfield is up to much, with the exception of Mr. Barry Brannan. So if we can double up on him and keep him quiet, that might be where we get some success. In terms of formation for the game, obviously Tuesday night we won't have Wes, so we'll need to come up with an idea for that. I don't think we'll do the 4-2-3-1. I think we'll see just a third midfielder coming into the middle there. And with O'Neill reportedly out for some time, I think Bonner said on Saturday that his foot's in the boot. Means that he won't be available. So it might be a good opportunity for Jensen Weir. Maybe he'll get some time. We've spoken about it on previous pods that for the midfield this season, they're going to have to be patient, and maybe something like a suspension or an injury will give them the chance to get a run in the team. So yeah, maybe we'll see something in Jensen Weir on Tuesday night.
Yeah, I think it's definitely going to be interesting to see how we sort of approach the game. Obviously, we assume no Wes, potentially no Joe Ironside if he's not recovered from the beating that he got at the hands of the two Ipswich centre-backs. Obviously, in that scenario, I genuinely don't know how I'd line up. It makes it so difficult if obviously we don't have Joe. We spoke probably 2 or 3 weeks ago about how important he is to the team, and the fact that if an injury does come, we might be a little bit stuck. But obviously interested in that respect. I mean, it's just going to be another great occasion, isn't it? Obviously at the Abbey, Sheffield Wednesday, obviously bringing similar numbers to Ipswich by the sounds of it, and obviously it's going to be close to, if not a sellout again. So it's obviously exciting times. They've got some fantastic players. Jordan, you obviously mentioned Bannon there, who is frankly ludicrous that he's playing in League One. Lee Gregory, who scored goals in the Championship fairly regularly for obviously a number of years, and we obviously know a lot about. He scored against us in the conference a couple of times for Halifax, and obviously in the playoffs as well. So a nice bit of that's probably not symmetry. It's probably not the right word, but I think you know what I'm saying. That we'll obviously come up against him again. It's obviously going to be a tough game. I would like to think that we can take something out of it. It doesn't surprise me necessarily to hear that there are murmurings of discontent at Sheffield Wednesday. The way they got relegated last season was pretty disappointing, given that they'd disappointing given that they'd been in the hump sort of promotion to the Premier League in fairly recent memory. So that'll still be obviously quite fresh in the mind of the fans. So I guess if you don't hit the ground running and really start the season well, I mean, they've started pretty well, but they're obviously not sort of top of the league or sort of in the playoffs just yet. That's obviously not going to help things. And I think the point that you raise there, Jordan, about not necessarily the attitude of the fans, but maybe the attitude of the coaches after the players, thinking that, are they too good for this level? Should they be playing against the likes of us? To me, that's exactly the sort of team that we're going to love playing against. Ipswich had it. Bolton had it earlier in the season for some reason, even despite the fact that we finished above them last season. They sort of come to the Abbey. They think they're going to walk all over us. Obviously, with Ipswich, we did. We tried our best, but we obviously got back into the game. Teams that come here underestimate us we do tend to like playing against. It was the same at Portsmouth as well. We just make it very difficult for these teams. And I think that's reflected in the fact that primarily the games that we've lost have been against teams who are not doing very well, and the teams who are expected to do well, we've typically done very well against. So I'm reasonably confident that we can take something out of the game. I'd love to see us win. I'd love to see us win, but you know, packed Abbey Stadium under the lights against a team like Sheffield Wednesday, a club like Sheffield Wednesday. I think it's also really nice that, you know, clearly we obviously missed the vast majority of last season seeing us getting promoted, but this is your reward. 8,000 at home against Ipswich, 8,000 at home against Sheffield Wednesday, trips to Portsmouth, etc. So it's really nice to kind of have these games coming up now. You know, Sunderland's not too far away. Obviously the away trip to Charlton on the horizon as well. So not just Tuesday night, but coming up is going to be another good opportunity to get stuck in, and hopefully we can continue along the same sort of vein of form as we have done against the others.
Yeah. I think the first goal on Tuesday would be quite a crucial one. Sheffield Wednesday aren't very good at coming from behind. Three times this season, they've fallen behind and they've lost all three of those games. James was telling me that last season they only got 1 point from a losing position, and that was right at the end of the season against Derby, I think in that game there. So if we can get an early goal for once, rather than giving an early goal away, it could make for a tasty evening. I think Tom's right. We seem to flourish against these teams that you know, sort of have the mentality of coming into the game of sort of thinking that they will beat us, and are teams that will kind of fall into that sort of that storyline, that trap of us allowing them to dictate the play and have the vast majority of possession. I think we'll see that again on Tuesday. And like Tom says, we seem to be doing better against those teams. We don't seem to do as well against teams that don't fall into that kind of sort of format. And obviously, you know, Tom's right, we've got some big games coming up in November. I think we, as it stands at the time of recording, in November, we play all four teams that are currently in the playoffs. But before then, we've got this small run of games against teams that are in and around us. Shrewsbury is obviously the first one, but I think we've got Morecambe, Doncaster, Wimbledon. Having gone through that sort of three-game run of Fleetwood and Gillingham and Crewe with only 2 points to show for it, we need to go through these next four with much, much better returns than that. So hopefully a good result against Sheffield Wednesday will give us a bit of momentum to go into that first game against Shrewsbury on Saturday. Shrewsbury won yesterday, a very impressive win against MK Dons. And it sounded very similar to our Bolton game. They won at home with only 26% possession. So it's going to be a case on Saturday of how we break that team down. Maybe being the away team might help us. There might be more emphasis on Shrewsbury being at home to maybe take the game to us. But yeah, two very different games in the space of, what, a week?
Yeah, that's their third win of the season, Shrewsbury, yesterday. So they're still occupying a relegation zone space. So, Tom, probably one of those games that we earmark as one that we really need to take points from, you know, from teams around us.
Yeah, and based on what I've just said about our form against those sorts of teams, maybe it's one that we should be a little bit frightened of. But, yeah, it'll be good to get back on the road again. I think, generally speaking, away games are going to suit us better. They're going to suit our style and sort of approach to games. So, yeah, it'll be good to see how we can sort of shape up and, you know, sort of test ourselves really, you know, again against teams that we would expect to be competing with, you know, to obviously survive. We talked a lot previously about the importance of turning zeros into ones. Obviously last season I was about turning ones into threes, right? Because obviously we're going to, you know, trying to get promoted, and now given that we're trying to survive, it's all about just where can we sort of scrape points from. So it's important that in these games that we are continuing to just kind of pick up points. I think you can, you know, forgive the odd defeat against some of those sort of bigger teams and you know, slip ups like Gillingham, but we can't be losing too many of them, certainly not in that sort of fashion. So yeah, hopefully we can get something at Sheffield Wednesday and go and get a win at Shrewsbury. It's really, that's what we should be going for, I think.
Yeah, it's worth pointing out that Shrewsbury play wing backs, which were our Achilles heel last season. I know we obviously line up differently without the diamond these days, but perhaps Saturday might be a prosperous day for our wide players. Maybe Brophy and Tracy might be able to find gaps between the wing backs and the centre backs there. So that might be where we get some joy away to Shrewsbury. But looking forward to it.
Yeah, October's nice and full of games. It's Tuesday, Saturday again after this week. So yeah, plenty more still to come in October for you, and we'll be with you every step of the way. We should probably mention that Cambridge United got the most Cambridge United FA Cup draw ever, getting drawn away to Northampton today.
At least it wasn't Newport, right? So there's some win in that.
Yeah, not much more to be said on that. Just a quick note to say thank you to everyone who posted questions for us. It's at AbbeyStandPod. We really do appreciate them, and it makes our lives a hell of a lot easier. So, yeah, nice to know that there's people out there. Jordan Warland, thank you very much for joining.
Yeah, thanks, everyone.
Tom Walker, thank you.
Cheers, mate. Thanks again.